Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Well, looky there. You poor unfortunate bastards, you found another episode of the Video Nasty Project, the show that dares to look into the abyss of censored and banned movies that the British Board of Fucking Cunts, and I'm pretty sure that's not their name, they deemed too scary for the common man to watch. Movies like The Killing Hour. It's all in German, so I don't know what the fuck this cover says, so let's just roll the trailer. And hopefully that's not in German either.
It started as a game. Turned into a nightmare. She was an art student. She had the power to see things beyond the normal range of human senses. She saw murder. Cursed with a terrifying talent, she became a silent witness to murder.
I saw the drawings, Verna.
Two men were drawn into the killings. One was a cop.
What do you want?
The other a TV reporter.
What do you think I want? We both know those killings aren't just another statistic. I want to use them on my show. How do you make these drawings?
My hand takes over.
Well, how does that happen?
It's unconscious.
I'm not going to let anything happen to you.
Both men became involved in her life. Both men loved her. One of them had to kill her.
I want the girl kept out of this. Don't put her on the show.
What, are you paying her rent? What's all the interest?
You might try to kill her.
Killing Hour, a film in the finest tradition of suspense.
Alrighty, and welcome back. We just got done seeing The Killing Hour, aka The Clairvoyant, which, if you get right down to it, neither of those titles are really not generic. They're very bland and don't do anything for me.
Yeah, the only thing that I will say is that The Clairvoyant is a better name. It's more apt to what the story is.
Yeah, because there's nothing really in the movie that really quantifies the killing hour. There's an hour that killing takes place in. The murders happen throughout the day, so it's kind of like...
So you've got New York in the late 70s, early 80s. So you have very sleazy, very porno, very dark and gritty. And this is the fun New York, not the homogenized Times Square filled with Spider-Mans and Pooh Bears.
The filmmaker, the guy who wrote the film and directed it, Antonio...
We're going to fuck up his last name.
Mario Anetti. Anyway... He was born and raised in New York. The guy is like a native Brooklyn guy. And he sets it in Brooklyn. Now, although in the film you don't really see much of Brooklyn, you just see enough to realize, okay, this is New York.
And New York is in the midst of a murder spree. There's this psychopath running around and killing, well, it's not actually a full-on, you know, dozens of people dead. But it does start out with a hooker turning up dead in presumably some sort of Hudson River sort of thing.
Yes, the Hudson River. That's one of the things that I really give this movie a bit of a ooh factor is the fact that it starts right off with a body.
This movie really grabs your attention in about the first 5 minutes because you've got the girl being fished out of the river and she's handcuffed and they grab her with a boat hooker and pull her up. And then they have the art student in a class where they've got the model up on like a pedestal and everybody's drawing and sketching and all of a sudden she starts sketching a little bit outside the lines.
Yeah.
And then you have what is probably the most horrific death I've seen in quite some time, where this guy who's swimming in this big Olympic-sized swimming pool.
He's doing laps.
He's all alone. All of a sudden, the lights go out. And he's like, what the fuck? Turn on the lights. Which I love. This is totally a New Yorker reaction. It's like, hey, you cunt! Turn the fucking lights back on! Not a, what's going on?
Yeah. Mind you, he didn't say the word cunt.
He did. Oh, no!
See you next Tuesday. Anyway,
and then we get to his actual death, where he's like, fine, screw it, whatever, I'm just going to get out of here, start swimming to the rail at the side of the pool, and as he's about to start climbing out, somebody underneath the water grabs him and pulls him under. They quickly handcuff his ankle to the ladder coming up out of the pool, and so he drowns about 3 to 6 inches away from safety.
Yeah, he literally gets about that much of his arm out of the water, which is...
Exactly.
It's like, oh, that's fucking... Ah!
And that is so fucking cruel. I was like, oh my God, that is a very clean death, but it is a horrific death.
Sure, he's really tugging really hard on his ankle. So yeah, he's probably...
Tearing up the skin and whatnot.
But it's shot with a filter. So underwater, it's red.
So you don't get any blood or anything.
You don't see the blood, but you get that the water is red. And it's just like, ah.
And then, to keep the pace of the movie up, a few scenes later, we get the Con Ed guy, who is out in the middle of the night on a street corner in New York. There's like a diner in the background, and he's like getting down into the lines and stuff.
Yeah, there's the usual tent, the flashing lights. He's got the guardrail.
The barricade, yeah.
Yeah.
And so he's like reaching for like a tool on the surface when somebody comes along and handcuffs his wrist and handcuffs it to the rail, the metal rail.
Yeah.
And then he's like, what the fuck is going on? And somebody electrocutes him by running electricity through the metal down through the handcuffs down in him, killing him.
Yeah.
Not quite as horrific as the swimming pool death, but it was still a pretty nasty way to go.
Yes.
That's about as violent as the movie gets. It doesn't really get super gory, but it does get kind of intense. Like,
yeah. The first murder, basically, as we don't see the murder. We see the recovery of the body. We then get a murder and a murder. And, like, in pretty rapid succession. And then the movie slows down.
Because that's when the cops show up. Because dead guy in the middle of the street, somebody's going to notice. Even New York. And so we meet Detective West and his partner, And they're investigating, and then the police chief comes down. It's like, I want a lid on this. Nobody gets out. I don't want somebody calling this the handcuff murders, because, you know, that's what the press does.
Yeah.
Cue the press.
Here's the funny thing is that if you, when watching this scene, you see the reporter, he's not that far in the background.
They even said that, how did he find out what's going on? He must have had a microphone on us or something. So he ain't that far away.
But, of course, he turns up. And this is probably the one actor out of everybody in the film that probably has just a little bit more notoriety than any of the other actors. Because the bulk of them, you see a face in passing and it's like, I've seen this guy in other films. Like the one cop is the airport owner out of The Rocketeer, only he's twice his size. The black cop is the guy from the movie Brother from Another Planet.
But, however, these are all the bit parts. The reporter, you'll be like, I know that dude, if you've seen Riptide.
Riptide. It's Luke Perry.
Not Luke Perry.
Not Luke Perry.
Wrong Perry. It's Perry King. We're not even fucking close. Luke Perry. Perry. No.
Perry King, best known for Riptide. But
although ironically, I know him best from the NPR Star Wars radio plays because he played Han Solo.
Anyway, we digress. Let's move on with what we're supposed to be talking about.
And so the reporter, he is all eavesdropping and he gets Detective West and kind of puts an arm around him. It's like, you know, come on over here. You know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine, and gets the inside scoop of what's going on. That there, this is not the first death, that there's been a couple of murders with handcuffs. And he's like, oh no. And so for the next probably about 20 minutes or so, we get kind of this parallel investigation from both the cop and the reporter. The reporter's doing his Clark Kent investigative reporting, and the cops are doing their, you know, get out there and find me some clues, you know, that sort of thing. That's when we meet our third protagonist of the movie, the psychic.
The clairvoyant. The artist. Basically, her medium is charcoal, pastel. Charcoal, whatever it might be.
I do have to say, for what is a basically really disposable prop, those were really good drawings. I don't know who they got to do it, but those were some good artwork.
Yeah, the artwork's really good. And this is the artist that we see at the very, very, very beginning of the film, where she's got the nude that she's sketching, and then out of nowhere, you can see the gal in the background. The sketching is happening, and it's basically the torso, head, arms, but and then suddenly out of nowhere, the long line down the middle of the picture starts happening, and it turns into the hands with the handcuff. And then that's the transition of showing the gal getting fished out of the river.
And so she goes to the cops with all these drawings and says, here's the stuff I've been drawing. And I've been doing it before the murders are being discovered. I have this gift. And interestingly enough, now usually in a police procedural, when somebody comes in from left field and says, I'm psychic, I can solve your case for you. What's the initial reaction that the police usually have?
Get out of here.
Skepticism.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, we do not get any skepticism from the cops. Everybody, the reporter, the television audience, the cops, everybody's like, psychic. All right, fine. Let's go.
Yeah, because they're actually looking at it from the end. Like, holy cow, this is revealing information that has been inside information. Only the police have known. But there's a couple of just subtle elements that are like, we didn't know that.
And so the artist works with the cops, kind of starts falling with Detective West a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have that love triangle, so she kind of starts falling for Perry King a little bit.
He has a talk show. He's like a poor man's Geraldo Rivera.
On basically a UHF network. So, I mean, this is like, you know, sixth tier television market stuff that he's doing.
Yeah, there's no studio audiences, a desk, a microphone, and he's got mugs with his show name on it.
And a little bow tie on it.
And the whole bow tie thing. And he decides to go off script. Because the floor producer and the people working the board are like, what is he doing? Because he starts talking.
Yeah, he basically outs the killer. It's like, look, there's a psycho running around handcuffing people and there's murders. And all of a sudden, here's our special guest. And he starts working on bringing the clairvoyant onto the show.
Yeah.
And so the movie is basically, at this point, everybody kind of working in concert. There's another murder, the guy on the elevator, which I thought was really good kill.
The elevator murder, I think, is... it's done with in such a way, you don't see anything. It's just that subtle, oh!
Because basically what they do is the guy is, like, he's propositioning a hooker and, like getting very violent. And they manage to save the hooker and, like, the madam takes her away. And he, like, leaves, storms out. And all you see is the shadows of him being thumped really good. Wake up on the top of an elevator chained with a handcuff. And all of a sudden the elevator starts going up. And you see this, basically, it's the drill press thing coming down on him. And pfft. Squish. Yeah.
And his feet, he's got his feet tied too. But it's just this, it's like the cross, it's like the girder cross beam that has all of the hardware for supporting the elevator. Right. And it's between the top of the elevator and just, it's like, ah! And you don't see it. But it's enough of that, it's like with Deep Red as a giallo, where they conceived all of the deaths to be something that would make you identify with what was happening to give you that, and this was that kind of kill.
One of the murders that really confuses me, where the clairvoyant's friend is this nurse, and they're like roommates, I guess, or at least very close. And so as they're going through the investigation, and the friend is like picking up on like things and like manages to save her from that one driver that was like trying to run her down on the sidewalk. Yeah. And she came and saved her and they got in their car and got the fuck out of there. So at some point in the movie, after the clairvoyant appears on the talk show and the whoever's out there is killing, it gets twigged that, oh, wait a minute, my secret's out. I better go kill the clairvoyant. But then he goes and kills the nurse friend, which is a little weird because why are you doing this when you're not really sending a clear message? I'm always kind of confused on what that was.
Well, there's the whole element that there's a red herring killer because what was his name? The character is treated as a English as a second language kind of guy. He speaks Spanish. I don't know, likely from Puerto Rico, and they kick in his door. He's feeding his dog, and they arrest him because they've gotten a bead that he's involved. It's because he got hired to go and beat up Mac and left the handcuffs behind. And his fingerprints are on the handcuffs. So there's this whole little red herring, like, he's the killer?
Okay, but it doesn't really make logical sense to why the killer, whoever they are, makes the connection to get the friend. It's a little tenuous. I mean, if this was kind of like your usual Argento giallo where nothing makes sense and you just kind of go with whatever the plot throws at you,
yeah.
I'd be like, okay, fine. Here, it doesn't quite work for me.
Yeah, it doesn't. I think it's a whole thing with maybe there's just not enough information. Pure speculation on my part is she gets killed because she knows the clairvoyant, the artist really well. And it's a possibility the artist has identified the killer and told her who it is. Or is it, I'm trying to psych her out by killing her friend to set her off edge.
Yeah, put her on her back foot, maybe. I don't know.
See, there's so many little, huh? I agree with you. There's no really continuity.
So the movie does have occasional rough spots like that. So, you know, we'll just kind of roll with it.
Now, admittedly, her death is actually rather exciting. So basically, she's knocked out, put in the car, handcuffed to the steering wheel, but she's in a position where she can't get up to see out. the accelerator pedal is mashed to the floor, and the so basically she's blindly steering the car inside a warehouse, out the wall, and into the river.
Where she drowns, which is also pretty horrific if you think about it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make a lot of sense. Oh, well, what you gonna
do? It's an exciting a little bit, like, ooh, car, crash, water, blah. But,
So my other issue that I had with the movie, aside from a little bit long and the very unfunny comic relief act, is that the lead doesn't really engender any sympathy. The lead doesn't really have any agency. She is just this prop that is moved from place to place to place, doesn't really do anything. Even at the end, you don't get a moment, a final girl moment, where she can, like, be courageous and heroic and stand up and do something. She's just there.
There is a problem with the whole final girl moment. Largely because she's not really the final girl.
I use the term only because that's kind of the lexicon.
But you know, it is something to actually, all right, now let's look at it from the standpoint of final girl. No. And that may be what it really the film is lacking, is there isn't a final. It's
the movie on many levels has a very good artistic eye. Like when the elevator guy, when he was getting captured, it was all just shadows on the wall of the reaction and the, we don't actually ever see anything. So it is clever. The director has a good eye for that sort of thing.
Yes. Very much so. But there's just, did you really have to set that shot up like that?
Yeah. So you got any final thoughts on this thing then?
I'd suggest it to people. I mean, if you want to see something that's actually reasonably well crafted, this is a film to watch.
That sounds good. I'll go with that. We're done. So, Ian, my amigo, was The Killing Hour seaworthy, or would you let it alone?
Oh, my God. I can't understand why anyone would really be paying any fuss over it.
The only reason I could think this wound up on the list was because we know by this point of the project that sexualized violence is a huge taboo.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And the climax of the movie is nothing but.
Somebody is over, oh, let's watch some movies. Horror, well, you know, you always have one person who might not, well, you don't always have, but you might have that one person who says, I'm not really into horror. Well, I'll tell you what. How about something that is suspenseful, but not, there's no gore, there's no, you know, silly exploitive violence, but it's a suspense. It's something that has you going, ooh, what's going to happen?
We make light of, oh my God, there was absolutely no blood in this. In this case, it was the God's honest truth. The only time you ever see blood in this entire movie was when he squeezed the cup in his hand.
Oh, the wine glass. Yeah, the wine glass.
Yeah.
The wine glass shatter.
That's it. So, no, this totally doesn't need to be on the list.
No.
Ian, did you like The Killing Hour?
It's an okay film. I notice I'm not pausing. Normally I'm like, no, this is an okay film. There's a couple of moments where it's like, okay, they want to demonstrate that somebody's not good at doing something, and they do a good job of that. The comedy, for the stand-up comedy bit. But outside of that, well-rounded performances. There's a number of actors in this that when you look at them, you go, I can remember this guy in 80s television, and one after another after another.
It has enough solid enough cast throughout it that it supports the people who were obviously not as seasoned in their careers. I will admit that this movie is not for everyone. This is a very extremely slow burn of a movie.
Yes.
But if you are willing to put the time in to get to the punchline, I think this movie has a great deal to offer. You just have to get through the character development and the not suspenseful bits.
While the movie does drag a bit and it's a bit slow, it's not really necessarily a fault of editing. The pacing that you know, editing is usually relied upon for pacing. That's not the case with this film. It's a matter of it actually the way, just the way the story, the style necessitated long shots. You can't really, the only way you can have an impact on pacing when you have this style of a long shot is you have to have the activity within the shot move quickly.
You need context to what the hell is going on.
Yes. I could go on and on and on about all the little things that I could see that are, could have been improved, but they're actually really like trivial, petty reasons. They're not anything to really be like, oh my God, if he had done this. No, it's not that at all.
Yeah, a little bit of trimming, a little bit of work here. I would say that the movie is, it's fine. It's adequate. It's not a waste of time. I've seen much worse on the list. I'll see much better down the road. So, no, it's fine.
One of the things that I would recommend to people is that if you want to see a time frame-wise, something that syncs up with what was going on in Italy with the Giallos then, and admittedly, a number of the Giallos were actually happening, you know, late 60s, the 70s and whatnot, but they were really running full steam as you got into the 80s. And if you wanted to see somebody doing something similar, I don't want to call this an American Giallo, but it's got enough that makes me go, oh. I mean, literally, that's as far as my reaction goes. It's like, wait, Giallo?
If you want to go with your American Giallo, then the obvious comparison is your Brian De Palma's, your Dressed to Kills. He loved the genre. That, you can look at that and say, I can totally see the DNA of a Giallo in his movie. Here, not so much.
No. It was just that whole element of suddenly there's all, I mean, something just tugging on me a little bit. And it was in that sequence of the focus of the gloves being put on. And I'm like, Argento?
Not quite as sleazy as your Argentos and your Fulcis and whatnot. So it's not quite as slick. It's not quite as colorful. But it does have Giallo undertones rumbling just underneath the surface.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll catch you next week. See ya.
Ice cream bars. It's the handy way to enjoy smooth, rich, creamy ice cream. Get some.
Alrighty, kids. That was The Killing Hour, and thank you for watching us watch this. Well, actually, you didn't actually watch us watch this. Oh, shut up. Never mind. That sentence got away from me. Next week, it's the end of the project, because next week, we're going to be watching the last horror film. And it's going to be... What? The fuck is the last horror film? It's just the title. God damn it. All right. Stay evil. We'll catch you later.
Yeast used to emit prodigious amounts of gas, and well, kids are merciless. They used to call it earth, wind, and fire. Thank you very much. Very nice.